Annie E. Casey Foundation.
Ready for a bold broadcast today. We're shining the light on three game-changing feminist guests to celebrate our special edition International Women's Day show. I'm Sharon Joy Kleitch with the Connection Partners.
And I'm Cher Tanner, Community Coordinator for the Pachamama Alliance Tampa Bay, here on WMNF 88.5 The Source, welcoming you to our special edition Spotlight on Game Changers show. This year's International Women's Day campaign, hashtag Press for Progress, confronts issues of gender parity globally. Believe it or not, the gender gap is widening. Based on last year's stats, to achieve parity will take over 200 years. Today, we're bringing it home to Tampa Bay, spotlighting three history-making women doing something about it.
I'm Sharon Joy Kleitch, hosting with Cher Tanner, Spotlight on Game Changers. The backbone of our show is the 10 qualities of the game changer developed by the Pachamama Alliance. They guide us in choosing our guests who exemplify the true meaning of being a game changer in the world. We discuss them in detail on our first show, which you can hear on our Facebook page, Spotlight on Game Changers. We have a 2-minute clip setting the stage for conversations with today's guest. Published on February the 22nd by Euronews, it's titled, Iceland Leads the Way on Gender Parity.
Just last month, Iceland became the first country in the world to introduce a law that requires equal pay for men and women. The Scandinavian island also ranks first in the World Economic Forum's Gender Equality Report. So what is Iceland doing right? This branch of IKEA in Reykjavik was a pioneer in implementing the new law. Half the staff and the majority of managers are female. And that's good for business, says the CEO.
It's absolutely impossible for the long term to have a profitable company unless you have your staff happy. Happy staff. They are producing more, they're selling more, and if half your staff is not happy, it's absolutely impossible to have a decent business.
In Iceland, equal rights start at home. Men and women are entitled to 3 months parental leave each per child, plus an additional 3 months to share. Hjalmar is taking parental leave so his partner can go back to work.
In the beginning, where they are like growing and getting to know things and learning themselves, it's good for me to get the connection.
And for me, it's really important that I can turn back to my job and still have my job and have high salaries, as high as the men.
Gender studies classes were first launched here 10 years ago. Now they're compulsory at most high schools.
There will not be equality nowhere in any society if the school system is not an active part in it. We mold their ideas here.
But even Iceland still needs to evolve. Alongside its record on equal rights, the country has high rates of violence against women.
Our first guest, Suzanne Benton, is an American mask performing and visual artist whose art feeds her activism and activism feeds her art. As a second wave feminist, she and her art traveled 32 countries, east and west, giving voice to women. And she was the founder and organizer for the 30,000 strong January 21st, 2017 Women's Solidarity March in St. Petersburg, Florida. Welcome, Suzanne. We are so thrilled to have you on our show, Spotlight on Game Changers.
Well, I'm thrilled to be on it, for sure.
And Cher,
you got my brain ticking here.
Oh, your brain is always ticking. And Sharon Joy Kleitch is here with me, and we just can't wait to talk to you because you are a featured guest on our International Women's Day show, and it's so, so appropriate. I just want to start with the big bang. I mean, you've done so many amazing things in your life that we will and can talk about, but I really want to start right out with the incredible Women's March that you founded and orchestrated last year on January 21st, and we had 30,000 people marching in St. Petersburg. It is just beyond amazing. So how did you put that whole thing together? How did it start, and what was the process?
Well, the first thing I have to say is I'm thrilled to be a game changer, given the title of a game changer. But I have to say that anybody who is a so-called game changer just starts out to do something. They don't have any sense. I didn't have any sense of the magnitude of what would happen. I came down here. I mean, I was completely shocked and overwhelmed, you know, as most of the world was when we had this upset election. So I came down to St. Petersburg, and I asked my friends what was happening because I wasn't going to go to Washington from here. Mm-hmm. And nothing. Nothing was happening. So this was, you know, December 11th.
Oh, my goodness.
Exactly.
And so what did you say to yourself, Suzanne?
Well, you know, when the election happened, a few days later, I gave a printmaking workshop at the Art Students League, and I always give a demonstration. And it was very clear to me, this woman that I kept drawing in these monoprints was expressing exactly how I was feeling. The shock, the shift of knowing, this was the important one, the shift. Where the reality hit me, and I knew I had to do something. I knew my life was changed, and I didn't know what was going to be asked of me, but I made a commitment with that artwork. You see, because artists are the ones that shape the reality of our time. So that monoprint looked back at me and said, yes, Suzanne, you're gonna have to do a lot. So when I came down, I already had that conviction. And my good fortune is that I go to the Sunday, I'm a attender at the Quaker meeting, the Sunday meeting, first day meeting. And over the years I've been coming down here, I actually came initially because they let me practice on their Steinway piano. And then I would sit in on the meetings. But I mean, I was familiar with the Quaker meeting and loved it. I knew, I mean, look at the history of the Quakers and what they've done in this country. Mm-hmm. So when you make an announcement at the end, I stood up and I said, I think there has to be a march in St. Petersburg. And I'm willing to do some work for it. Well, that was the little sentence.
The little sentence that turned into 30,000 people in the streets.
Yes, but you see, if I was the only one, I would have marched.
Right.
And I think that's what game changers are. They're willing to step up, number one, and we're not afraid of censure. I mean, you know, I'm a second wave pioneer feminist. And I learned a lot in that period of time. And mm-hmm. I just want to say, if we had 30,000 people, we represented 300,000 people. Because
right.
Every person who marches represents 100 who can't. I can't tell you how many people I've talked to in St. Petersburg who said, I wanted to, but I couldn't. I couldn't because this, that, and the other. And you know that people want to and can't. And mm-hmm. The other thing is, There was an African-American feminist in the second wave. Her name was Flo Kennedy. She's a lawyer and a powerhouse. And I heard her speak on many occasions. And she said, there are people who make things happen. There are people who watch things happen. And there are people who don't know what happened. So if 5 million people marched around the world, that's a half a billion people. That's a half a billion people who were committed. And then there's another half a billion or a billion who care but would never do anything. All those watchers. And then trickling down, we have the haters. But that's trickling down.
Exactly.
And one of the reasons it happens, or anything happens, is because, okay, you stand up, but then people come and stand beside you.
Mm-hmm. I was standing beside you, I'm happy to say, and a whole bunch of my female friends. We came down from Indian Rocks Beach to join the amazing event. We were so proud and so happy, and we were making such a statement about women's rights and the need to have Planned Parenthood and, you know, all the aspects of our democracy that women truly, truly care about. That sometimes gets lost because so many of our politicians are males. So it was an amazing time, and we all left there ebullient. Now, I know there was another march this year. How did it evolve, Suzanne, into what this march this year? I know it was hashtag Me Too and hashtag Time's Up was part of that. So how did that unfold this year?
Well, you know, there were sort of two separate uprisings that, of course, are connected. The Women's March in Washington, they were the initiators. We marched in solidarity with them. So we got the title of sister marches. But this year's march was organized through the Washington March. So Lisa Perry, who had organized the buses and who's been active, you know, ad infinitum, she spearheaded that. And there were other, you know, she had other people in this area. And I certainly spoke with her, and because I had organized the other one, I knew how it all happens. But, you know, I mean, I wasn't the only organizer here. I had the most extraordinary team, brilliant and incredible team, who, of course, got enormously excited and impassioned. They started out impassioned, but excited? How did people get excited? And here I have to say, you folks in the media really are important. Because Amy Weintraub sent out a wonderful media person who's also a wonderful speaker, by the way, and still, you know, doing everything under the sun through the League of Women Voters. She sent out those packets, those media packets, and then I started, she just said, Suzanne, you're going to go here, you're going to go here. WMNF was wonderful, and I got on this, on TV, and this, that, and the other thing, and articles, and this, that, and the other thing. And so As our march got more attention, we all got excited. St. Petersburg got excited. I have to tell you, we had people who came from Naples. There was a march in Sarasota. They didn't go to it. They came to our march.
Mm.
Because we were the most energized.
Suzanne, let's pick up on that word, energized. I was struck by something you said earlier when you said, artists shape the reality of our time. And what about you, us, we, as energetic beings? What is the connection? What do you think between your expression as an artist? I mean, here you were practicing on this piano, and then later,
yes,
within the resonance of that building, that history of the Quakers of peace, you stood up and said, march. So what do you think that was about, you artists, we artists? Because I think we're all artists in our own creativity.
Yes,
would you speak a little
bit
about why you think there was so much energy in St. Petersburg.
Well, I think St. Pete, you know, I've been coming down to St. Petersburg. I have also have to admit I have a house in Connecticut, Ridgefield, Connecticut, where I've lived for 53 years. But I have to say my life here is definitely incredibly rich. So I've seen this city, the word that comes to my mind is explode, although I think that's too aggressive. I've seen it come into its own. And I have to say, I think that, you know, good government makes a big difference.
Mm.
And I think we have a good government here now. I mean, we have a good mayor, a really good mayor. He came to our march. He spoke. He made January 21st Women's Rights Day in St. Petersburg. So, yeah, we have to keep good government. And, we were mostly women. Mostly women around the world. And what do we women have? We have children. I was thinking, you know, I went swimming before this great event, which is all, talking with you, which is also very good. I find lots of ideas come to me while I'm swimming. There's that saying, never underestimate the power of a woman.
Mm-hmm.
So our government's going to have to learn. Never underestimate the power of the women and our children.
Mm-hmm.
Look what's happening now with our children.
Yes.
With these high school, articulate, impassioned, angry, determined, committed, energized young people, they are our future in a million ways, because one of them is going to be president. Others are going to be senators and congressmen. They are going to take over our cities. They are going to demand the end of racism in America. Do we want to be a country that can't overcome our crimes? No, we don't.
And it is so fabulous to have these young people leading the way, going to the Congress, going to Tallahassee, and they're demanding what it is that they know that will make the world the more beautiful world our hearts know is possible, that we all want. And it is so exciting to have these young leaders leading the way. I know you have a fabulous daughter that you certainly have given great, magnificent mentoring to. In fact, I'm in the middle of reading her book, Lily DeJean.
Oh, wonderful.
And you must be most excited to have done such a great job with women around the world, but especially in your own home. So we have just had such a grand time talking with you today, Suzanne. We're going to have you back on and just make it a full hour, because you are such a magnificent person and have so many great stories for us to hear. And thank you so much for sharing from your heart. And we look forward to having you back again very soon, if you will honor us with that.
Well, I'd be thrilled. So thank you very much. I just want to mention March for Our Lives Tampa on Facebook, and Tampa Bay Area Feminists. That was the sister march. I'm one of the administrators in that. So have people look us up, and so they can follow what's happening.
Yes, we're going to have them look you up on Suzanne Masks as well.
Oh, thank you. No, yes, SuzanneBentonArtist.com.
I'm Cher Tanner here with Sharon Joy Kleitch, hosting our show, Spotlight on Game Changers, on WMNF 88.5 The Source. And that was Suzanne Benton. You can learn more about her at SuzanneMasks.com and follow her on Twitter at SuzanneMasks.
Next up is Ruth Whitney, PhD, who served in the Peace Corps and after graduate school taught women's studies in universities for decades. Ruth has worked for women's rights, civil rights, and other progressive causes. She now serves on the Pinellas County Domestic Violence Task Force. Ruth authored Feminism and Love, Transforming Ourselves and Our World. Hi there, Dr. Whitney, I presume?
Yes.
We are delighted to feature you as part of International Women's Day on this show, Spotlight on Game Changers. You certainly are a game changer.
Oh, thank you.
We are delighted to begin the conversation. I like to go back to not the beginning necessarily, but I was inspired by your inspiration by President John Kennedy. Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country, and what you stood up and showed up and did. Can you tell us a little bit about that, Ruth?
Yeah, it was a really exciting time. Kennedy had been elected. It was 1961. He was inaugurated in January, and he was very fast in getting the Peace Corps going.
Uh-huh.
And that's, you know, the statement that you quoted is you know, touched my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And when they said there were exams, I took an exam. It was a whole room full of people. They had many, many applicants. And then they did a selection process and sent us telegrams that invited us to a training in California. And after 2 months of that, President Kennedy invited us to the White House
right before
we left for Africa.
Mm.
And we got to meet him in the Oval Office. He spoke to us in the Rose Garden. And we were the very first group to go overseas in representing the Peace Corps. And it was a wonderful 2 years. I taught math in a public high school in Ghana, West Africa.
Did you get to choose Ghana, or did you give them a range of countries that you'd like to go to?
Well, it's changed, and nowadays, I believe the Peace Corps lets you choose. But in our case, it was kind of a very funny thing. They sent us this telegram that said, you are invited to go to Chana, C-H-A-N-A, or some other country. It was all just beginning, and they worked all together, but it was a typo. There is no country, C-H-A-N-A. And so we all got on a plane to go to California to train to go to this non-existent country. It turned out to be Ghana. It could have been China. You could change it two different ways and to make it into a country. But I'm still friends with all the 50 that we flew out together.
That's so amazing, Ruth. This is Cher Tanner. I'm so excited to be talking with you today for International Women's Day. And to hear that this is still actually an active and viable organization.
And I know that my fellow Peace Corps that I served with, they really care about Ghana. I mean, they even watched the soccer results, the World Cup soccer. You know, how's Ghana doing in the soccer?
Well, I think that's a beautiful testament to a world now today where globalization is really what it's all about. And what you're saying is at this very young age, people can really have this experience of being part of the world, not just the United States of America. And, you know, one of the issues for this International Women's Day is, I'd say the main issue actually this year is about gender parity. And certainly that's a global problem. And we have that problem right here in America in lots of aspects. And with the new hashtag Me Too and hashtag Time's Up, I mean, we're seeing that gender parity is a huge concern here in America. And so we wanted to have an expert actually to come and talk a little bit for our listeners around the issues of domestic violence, because when women are in situations like that, it's impossible for them to be on a level playing field. And so we talked to some people to find out who the expert in the area might be, and it turns out it's you, Ruth. So you are and have been part of the Pinellas Domestic Violence Task Force since the beginning, which started in 1987. And perhaps you can give us a little idea on how that came into being and the statistics actually that we're dealing with today in 2018.
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, I'm the chair of the statistics committee of that task force and have been for many years. You realize that 30 years ago it started, and we've done a lot of good work, but of course there's always more good work that needs to be done. The principles that we look at when we look at the statistics are, how many arrests are the police making? Because if some men are arrested, that, you know, they don't like that. It looks very bad on their to their boss and so forth. So that might discourage some of them from, because the purpose is to reduce the violence. And second, we ask the state attorney to do more prosecutions, because again, you get this on your record and it doesn't look good to employers. And third, we want the judges to sentence the batterers to batterers intervention program, and that's the program that we've had since the beginning of the task force, and it's a therapist, and it's a 26-week program that was developed in Duluth, Minnesota, which we have the power and control wheel. What the batterers do is want to control, have power over and control the women, and in all aspects of the life, of their life together. And they use in this batterers intervention program, talk to the batterers for 26 weeks about the different ways in which they are practicing power over the women. And we try and get them to change their behavior. So we want the judges to sentence to, you know, all of them. We really like all of them. And the same if the women get an injunction, but they're not going their batter is not going through the criminal process. We want them, it's a civil injunction. We want the judge who gives the civil injunction to sentence them to batterers intervention program. And I'm sad to report that we do much better on the criminal side than we have on the civil side. And not many of the judges, in fact, less than 15%, well, about 15%. In the last couple of years have been sentencing. That means 85% are not. And that is a way you can stop the violence. Not every time, but so that's some of the things that we're doing. And in my very committee, we don't just look at the statistics, we look for solutions. And so last year we worked on talking to the state attorney's office about more prosecutions. This year, we may go back to doing that, and we actually did a training for the prosecutors. A lot of the state attorneys don't understand domestic violence, and they may even ask, why do the women leave? Why don't they leave? That's a standard question that a lot of citizens and even the men working to prosecute batterers ask. And that's not the right question. The right question is, why do these men batter?
Right.
You know, it's not the woman's fault. So we worked on that in our committee last year, and this year we're going to meet with the Police Standards Council in March and ask all the police chiefs in Pinellas County to increase the number of detectives that they have who are working on domestic violence, and that will be mainly the larger departments because some of the small departments have very small departments. But the larger ones, the Sheriff's Office, St. Pete, Clearwater, Largo, and the Pinellas Park, currently, until last month, did not have any detectives who were specialized. And again, they need that training to understand domestic violence in order to work properly with the victims to get them to cooperate so we can prosecute. We didn't have any detectives. They have detectives who specialize in burglary and homicide and economic crimes and all these other different kinds of crimes. They have detectives that specialize in it, children's crimes. But we don't have any detectives that specialize in domestic violence. Until recently, the St. Pete Police Department put in one. And it's
one.
Yes. Well, that's an improvement over zero.
That's true.
Now, so what we're going to do after we meet with all the chief of police and say what we're asking for we're going to go to each individual chief. We're starting with, we'll probably start with Clearwater and, you know, talk to them and give them statistics on their own. We'll have statistics for all the chiefs, but we'll have Clearwater statistics for the chief of police of Clearwater. And we also are going to ask them to get more victim advocates. Now, some of the audience may not know what victim advocates do, but they help the police with all crimes. They help all victims. But there are so many domestic violence crimes that that's a lot of what their work is helping victims of domestic violence. And we want them to be able to go through the criminal process in order to get their batterer sentenced to batterer's intervention. So, but they need help to understand the process and be sympathetic because, the victim advocates I know are all such sympathetic, caring people that they can really help the person with the problems that they have because of the battering and then the criminal process.
Ruth, you have other advocacies as well, which is women's studies for us, not just for women, but for men, for all of us to study about women, the history of women. And I'm particularly taken with your saying changing people's behavior, because you have a book called Feminism and Love, Transforming Ourselves and Our World. How do you see that book and women's studies addressing how we change our behavior? And for not only men, but for women to recognize power.
Yes. This ties right in with the domestic violence.
Yes.
Because I taught women's studies for, 20, 30 years at Rutgers University as well as at the University of South Florida, and I'm proud of both those schools because they were some of the early schools to get women's studies, and it's a really important subject. Most people say, well, we don't have any men's studies. Well, all the courses are about men. Look at the history books.
Right.
And the economic books and so forth.
I haven't noticed any White History Months either.
No.
White Men's History Months.
Yeah. One way to stop the violence is, and in fact, what we're doing right now in the Domestic Violence Task Force is helping the victims and helping them through the criminal justice system. But we need to take a step before that. And before that is, how are people raised?
Right.
And right now, there's a definition in of our culture for men that they're supposed to be tough and they're supposed to dominate people and they're supposed to be in control of everything. And the image that is portrayed to women is that we're supposed to be soft and gentle and submissive to men. And with all the sexual harassment, the men want us to look sexy, and even if we're in the workplace, we're supposed to be sexual objects. They treat us as sexual objects in sexual harassment, and we're supposed to be controlled. We have to change those definitions of what it means to be a real man and a real woman.
Ruth, those are brilliant statements about how we might really pay attention on this International Women's Day, is to pay attention to what it really means to be a man and what it really means to be a woman. This has been a remarkable conversation.
And Ruth, we'd like to have some contact information, please, from you so that our listeners can reach out to you if they want to assist you and the work that you continue to do as an activist.
The email is my name, ruthwhitney@verizon.net. And my phone number is 727-821-6890. Oh, and I could say that the Pinellas Domestic Violence Task Force meets on the third Tuesday of every month. And the next one will be March. And it's at 2 p.m. at Empath in Clearwater, which is connected to hospice. So our next meeting is March 20th. And everyone is welcome. We need all the help we can get. You can be a volunteer. You can be a group and send a representative from a group that's interested in domestic violence. And besides my committee, there's, you know, a prevention committee and lots of other committees doing important work. And we would welcome all the help we can get.
You've just heard from Dr. Ruth Whitney. Her email is ruthwhitney@verizon.net. The next Pinellas Domestic Violence Task Force meeting is on March the 20th at the Suncoast Hospice Empath at 2 p.m.
Our final guest today is Aaron Smith Abel, a board-certified health law partner at Shoemaker, Loop, and Kendrick, and serves on boards of several charities. Aaron passionately supports progressive causes, local candidates, elected officials, and is the co-founder of the Surly Feminists for the Revolution, an international feminist online and in-person forum with nearly 15,000 members. Hello, Aaron. We want to welcome you to our International Women's Day show.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be here.
Well, we could not pass up talking to the woman that started Surly Feminists. Oh, my goodness gracious. What a title. You've got to tell our listeners about this.
Well, right after the election of Donald Trump in 2016, I was pretty down and decided that I needed to do more. And I was with a group of friends, mostly women lawyers, and we were drinking wine, and I came up with the idea for the name. And I want to give full credit to my co-founder and co-administrator, Liz Lanier, who's also a lawyer in Tampa. And she said, "Erin, I'll create the Facebook page." And so she did that. And we just started adding our friends, and I'm kind of good at social media. And so I used my skills that I used in business to help develop and grow the group. And then it became what it is today, which is a very large, active group locally and also somewhat nationally and internationally.
I mean, it's crazy. You've got, what, 14,840 members?
Yes, it's very close to 15,000. Yeah.
That is just wild. So you say they're even in other countries. So tell us a little bit about the membership. I know it's a closed group, but it's not a secret group, is it?
No, it's not a secret group. We have about 5,000 really active members between in the Tampa Bay area. That's Tampa, St. Petersburg, Clearwater, and in the broader, even broader than that. We have a few more thousand all over Florida. We have thousands in, we have, I think, a few in every state. Some states we have a couple hundred in different states. And then we have like a few in about 50 countries outside, according to the demographics of the group that Facebook provides me.
Wow, that's crazy, 50 countries. So tell our listeners a little bit, Aaron, about the purpose of Surly Feminists and what you're hoping to accomplish as an organization going forward.
Well, it has several purposes. We thought we, you know, I was troubled by the negative use of social media in the last presidential election. And I said to myself, I'm going to take social media and I'm going to use it for something positive. I'm going to use it as a stepping stone or a building block to give, to get people good information, but then to get them offline and to do meaningful acts. And those acts could be running for office, supporting a candidate, doing meaningful charity, going out and getting education on various issues, whether it be in the arts or in politics, and making meaningful connections. So those are all the things that the Surly Feminists do. We have a strong local following in that we really do things offline together.
Mm-hmm.
But we also use the online information sharing in the group as a means to get important voter information and education on feminist issues.
Well, I mean, just talking about getting together, I noticed that you had a book club, and I saw that the last recommendation was Daring to Drive, which I did get that book, and I'm not quite done with it yet, but almost. I mean, what an amazing story, and I think that's so exciting that you have people coming together to then discuss such a profound book. I mean, really getting that inside look into Saudi Arabia and how women, I know things have changed somewhat around driving there, but just the cultural ramifications of growing up in Saudi as a woman, and to realize how we have to protect our interests here in the United States as far as our rights go.
That's right. We try to use the book club as a means to educate ourselves on different issues, whether they be political or feminist issues in the United States or somewhere else. So we really use the book club as an opportunity to connect together in person, but also open our minds to here's what feminists are dealing with in other countries. Or, you know, we're doing in the time of the butterflies in April, we're going to a play about women activists in the Dominican Republic. So we try to expand our minds using those book clubs.
Hi there, Erin. I'm Sharon Joy Kleitch here with Cher on Spotlight on Game Changers. Today, we're on 88.5 FM as well as The Source. We are delighted to hear more details about what you're up to. I'm curious how you also work for a living and sleep.
And raise two kids, right?
Just,
oh my gosh.
Seven. So I get up very early in the morning, and I have, we have four administrators of our group. One is in Baton Rouge. She's a lawyer. The other is, she works on campaigns, and she's currently in Colorado. And then the other one is, who I mentioned, Liz. She's a local lawyer here in Tampa, and I'm a lawyer in Tampa. So we really just let the group run itself for the most part. I get up early in the morning, and I try to post good national information and sometimes local information. I have different topics that I do on every day, like Membership Monday, Giving Tuesday, Woke Action Wednesday. So I try to generate conversation with that either early in the morning or late at night. And then I just post as I have a break if something comes up. If there's, you know, if there's an issue, someone has, you know, broken the posting rules or something, then I just have to deal with it on an as-needed basis. But frankly, you know, during my regular business hours, I'm practicing law. So
yeah.
I don't have as much time to be online, being an online nanny, so to speak. So that's why we have we're all volunteers, and we all try to pitch in and help as we can to make sure it's an enjoyable page for everybody.
Well, you're doing a terrific job, Erin. One of the things I'm also curious about is from everything you've been telling us, you don't sound the least bit surly.
It's really true.
So where do you get to be surly? We haven't heard about that. And for the revolution.
I know. I love the name that I came up with because it means a lot of different things to different people. I'm not at all surly. There are some members that are quite surly.
Oh, okay.
But I'm not. And I'm surly about the situation. And
okay.
I'm 46 years old, and there's no women president of the United States ever, and women are still not getting to the top of CEO positions, and that women at different economic stages and different races and different backgrounds are just not really where they're not at equality, and they're just not where they need to be. I was raised thinking that there was this great feminist movement in the 60s and 70s and women advanced so much, and now I'm looking with my sisters and we're just feeling like it's really not there. So that's what I'm surly about. The revolution also means different things to different people. That's why I like it. It's open. The revolution can mean, you know, me too, no more sexual harassment. It can mean, you know, consent means consent. It can mean women being represented in our electorate equal to their representation in the population. So I leave the revolution up to the member, and everyone has their own revolution.
Right. Now, when are you going to run for office, Erin?
No time soon. I'm busy running the revolution. Maybe someday. My law practice is very, very busy. I've got a 10-year-old and a 13-year-old that I'm still raising.
Oh, my gosh.
I really think that one of the things I have learned over the past year, and a little more than a year, is that you can do a lot of things not holding political office. You can have, you can be a citizen activist and actually accomplish a whole lot without a whole lot of regulations. So I like that. So I am doing that for now. And I also really like helping other people. So, you know, that's why I enjoy practicing law. And I also enjoy helping great candidates get elected. So I'm focusing on helping candidates, particularly other women, but also some men get elected locally.
And so how does Surly Feminists for the Revolution affect your law practice? I know you're in the health industry, right, mm-hmm. with your practice. Is there anything, any kind of a relationship there? Have you had any kind of negative feedback as a result of creating this organization, or are they kind of totally separate entities?
That's a really good question. I think that I benefit from my position in that I'm a senior lawyer in my law firm with an already very busy law practice. I've been practicing law for 20 years, and I practice in a very specialized area of the law in healthcare regulatory law, which, of course, you know, you can understand that has political ramifications too. Mm-hmm. Because I'm constantly studying what's going on in health policy. So I have seen, if anything, an increase in my business since I become politically active. I have not seen any negative reactions from my clients. That's not to say there couldn't be, but I, of course, don't talk about politics with my clients. If they bring it to me, I'm happy to discuss it with them, but I don't ever bring that up in my work.
I was reading that you actually have some Trump supporters in your organization. You actually have some people that are conservative, Christian evangelicals. Yeah, sure. So it's kind of interesting that this Surly Feminist for the Revolution has really appealed to a broad audience.
I think that it mostly, I'm going to be completely honest, it mostly appeals to people who don't like Trump.
Okay.
But I will tell you, that's a very diverse group. We do have a few people who I personally know who voted for Trump who are in the group. It's a very small minority, but they're people that I personally know that like the feminist aspect of the group. I spend a lot of time talking to everybody of whatever political affiliation and whatever background they have. I'm open to listening to anybody. Not everybody in our group feels that way. They like to kind of be in the group so they can be away from their family who may not have voted like they did or may not have the same opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Every member is a little bit different, but I can just speak for myself that I'm very open to talking to other people. My place of work and my clientele are quite diverse. And I just, you know, whatever someone else thinks doesn't attack what I think. I know what I stand for, and I'm happy to listen. And if they want to listen to me about what I think about politics and feminism, I'm happy to share that as well.
Erin, as one of our featured guests on International Women's Day, I'm curious, what about tools? What about clues for other game changers like you are here on Spotlight on Game Changers? What have you learned? What helps? What's made your initiative so healthy?
Well, one of the things that I think has helped me a lot, and that I've seen some people struggle with that I wish they would work on a little bit, is being open and non-judgmental.
Thank you.
Meeting other people that may have different viewpoints, and also making connections offline instead of just relying on communications online in the social media context. I think those are two very, very important things. People need to think about also when they're online and they're communicating, a lot of stuff is missed, and so you can come off much more angry, or you could just be more angry because you're not looking the person in the face and reading all the cues. So I wish people would be more thoughtful about their communication, be more open and not judgmental, and make offline communications. I think that can really help change the game in a lot of respects.
Thank you.
I love that. And I think that's probably a perfect note to end on. It's been such a delight having you on our show. And we want to make sure, Erin, that people can reach out to you should they desire to. How do they find Surly Feminists? So just give us a little contact information.
Thank you. All you have to do is get in your Facebook browser and search Surly Feminists for the Revolution. And then you ask to be added. You will be asked some questions that you need to answer. And if you answer those questions, we pretty much admit everybody. Unless they say something awful or rude, you know. But if they seem like they'd be a good member, they can handle the fact that we're an intersectional feminist group. And we have, they'll follow our posting guidelines. They are admitted.
Fabulous. Terrific. And if they want to get in touch with you, if they need some legal assistance, is there any other contact information you'd want to give out?
I'm very easy to find at Shoemaker Loop and Kendrick in Tampa, Florida at 813-227-2357. That's my direct line.
Terrific. Well, again, thank you so much for being with us on International Women's Day. It's very, very exciting to hear all about your organization and the amazing things you're doing.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. I really enjoyed this.
Our last guest was Tampa attorney Erin Smith Abel, a co-founder of Surly Feminists for the Revolution, a group you can find and join on Facebook. For law services, call her at 813-227-2357.
We're going to close with this audio clip, which ties together this week's show celebrating International Women's Day and the 2018 campaign for gender parity with the UN Sustainable Development Goals for 2030. Just published on February 14th by UN Women, here are the facts about gender equality and the Sustainable Development Goals.
The 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development promises to make human rights real for everyone, everywhere. It has 17 goals and gender equality cuts across all of them. At a time when we're facing conflict, extremism and environmental degradation, the SDGs focus on sustainability, equality, peace and progress. The SDGs challenge deepening inequalities around the world by committing to leave no one behind.
The 2030 Agenda is very clear. There can be no sustainable development without gender equality.
In reality, however, gender inequalities are pervasive in every dimension of sustainable development.
Globally, women and girls are overrepresented among the extreme poor. 330 million women and girls live on less than $1.90 a day. That's 4.4 million more than men.
In nearly two-thirds of countries, women are more likely than men to report food insecurity.
Despite recent progress, access to quality education is still not universal. Globally, 15 million girls will never get a chance to read or write compared to 10 million boys.
Climate change has a disproportionate impact on women and children. They are 14 times as likely as men to die during a disaster.
The majority of urban women are living in conditions where they lack access to clean water, improved sanitation facilities, durable housing, or sufficient living space.
In many areas, the current rate of progress is too slow to achieve the SDGs by 2030. To turn promises into action, we need to step it up now.
We need public action to tackle inequalities and discrimination.
We need to invest in policies and programs that work for women and girls.
We need more and better data to assess whether what we are doing for women and girls actually works.
And we need greater accountability at all levels for commitments made but not met.
Let's turn these promises into action.
And gender equality into a lived reality for all women and girls.
It's up to all of us
to ensure the journey is successful.
So that clip was published just now, February 14th, by UN Women, and the facts about gender equality and the Sustainable Development Goals. What I loved about that is hearing the voices from all over the world. Let's begin being game changers that turn promises into action. Tell your friends that this International Women's Day show will be rebroadcast this Sunday in our regular time slot, which is 8 a.m. on WMNF, The Source, and will then be available to listen on demand with all of our archived shows on our WMNF Spotlight on Game Changers homepage. I'm Cher Tanner. Thank you so much for listening to our special International Women's Day show.
And I'm Sharon Joy Kleitch. We want to thank you, Ira, for engineering Spotlight on Game Changers here on WMNF 88.5 The Source. We appreciate you for tuning in each week to listen, and we look forward to seeing you out there in the community being game changers.
Beautiful trees, breathing the air. Beautiful. beautiful bees moving from flower to hive. Beautiful seas mirroring sky. Beautiful sky. Beautiful world, beautiful.
This is 88.5 WMNF in Tampa, Community Conscience Radio.
WMNF Tampa.